The prospect of going into real combat with aliens was thrilling and daunting at the same time. Several other familiar faces followed me into Leeson's group, the most notable of which were Kiwi, Carlos, and Natasha. They looked as scared as I was, but they were doing their best to fake confidence. The experienced light troops were very different from my gaggle of recruits. They didn't think I was cool. They thought I was shit, and they let me know it every chance they got. We drilled and exercised until our bodies and minds were harder than before. Most of us died in the training sessions during those final weeks, some more than once. I'd managed to avoid the experience so far, but I knew that couldn't last forever. The training changed me. It changed us all. Our spirits were tougher by the end. I don't think anyone can die or watch his comrades die around him multiple times as I did, and still maintain an easygoing personality. The big day finally came 2 months after I'd killed Veteran Harris. Today we were going into action and landing on our target world at last. We reached Cancri 9 just after midnight, but the Tribune, who was running the show up on the bridge, didn't let us hang around in our bunks until morning. By 02:30, I was suited up and marching down into the bowels of the ship where the lifters waited. It was from their massive deployment bays the dropout pods would be released. There hadn't been much in the way of a briefing. I'm sure the officers knew more, but all I'd heard was that we were to drop into a jungle-like landing zone of the planet high in the mountains. Apparently only the highest lands were wet and green, while the plains were bone dry. There was a large compound that would serve as our LZ, and we were to deploy defensively the moment we were down. What were we defending? As I understood it, there was a large mining complex under us, and it was under threat. I kept thinking about Cancri 9. I couldn't believe I was actually here. I'd fought online battles on this planet in simulators for years. I was sure it would be very different in person than it had been in the sims, but I felt confident the basics would be familiar. It was definitely going to be hot and full of intelligent, violent reptiles. In a way, it wasn't surprising that we'd ended up in the Cancri system. Video games had been made about this world for a good reason. The planet was turbulent and full of warring factions. They were, in fact, one of our best customers. They hired Earth's legions regularly to impress one another. I guess they thought alien troops were cool. I read more about the planet on my tapper and learned details from our briefings. The Saurian population was a relatively rich people. The planets in their star system, including their home world, were heavy with minerals. Their home planet was a carbide world with an iron-rich core and a high carbon content. The first carbide planet humanity ever found was 55 Cancri E. In mankind's exploratory days of the 21st century, before the intrusion of the galactics, such planets were found to be odd, but not terribly rare. Cancri, as we called it now, was a binary star system in the constellation of Cancer. Its unusual nature was discovered in 2012. The first planet we noticed was an inhospitable world far too close to its star to support life, but friendlier, high-carbon planets were located subsequently. Cancri 9 was one of those worlds, discovered in 2039, about a decade before the galactics first came to Earth. As a carbide planet, what made the Saurian homeworld unique was its habitability. Most carbide or diamond planets were too toxic or too hot to support life. Cancri 9 provided a rare combination. A warm water world rich in iron, diamond, and many other rare earths, with the added benefit of a breathable atmosphere. We called them steel worlds because they were literally made of iron and carbon, the two primary elements of steel. In places, these two components had formed veins of actual steel, a metal that didn't occur naturally on Earth. The outer crust was sprinkled with organic matter, but this was a mere shell over an iron core of metal, and most abundant of all, carbon. In short, Cankri 9 possessed a fantastic treasure trove of materials perfect for building ships and other structures. As a result, the Saurians had credit to throw around, unlike Earth with her handful of mercenary legions. After reading several technical articles, I deactivated my tapper and told myself it didn't matter anymore why I was here. The important thing was that I was about to drop onto a burning rock circling a binary star. The drop itself was going to be a terror. We'd practiced drops and null-grab operations many times, but I knew the real thing was bound to feel different. It was my first drop, my first battle, and my first war. I wanted to crap myself.
"Systems check, Legionnaires!"
shouted Veteran Harris, marching down my aisle. I felt the love when his eyes fell on mine. Then he was gone, marching down the row, checking force buckles and magnetic locks. We were already packed into the lifter. The plan was simple. The lifters would wallow down from Corvos, entering the world's atmosphere. When we were at a suborbital altitude, we would be dropped into our pods. All around me, men and women began tapping at their interfaces and moving their armored limbs. The guy in the jump seat next to me whacked me with his rotating shoulder joint. It didn't hurt much, but I was wearing only smart cloth, not an inch of steel. The jarring contact was enough to cause me to flinch away.
"Sorry, Splat," he said to me in a rough voice. "Didn't mean to scare you."
I glanced at the name tag and rank insignia on his shoulder, which identified him as Sargon, a specialist. Sargon had a cannon emblem over his stripes, indicating he was a weaponeer. I could have figured that out just by looking at his gear. He got up and hauled down a huge collapsed cylinder from the upper racks. It was a weapon nicknamed the Belcher, a heavy plasma weapon that resembled a rocket tube that needed to go on a diet. As he retrieved his weapon, he made a point of putting his armored ass into my face. I punched him hard enough to put a bright silver mark on his burnished armor. My knuckles were armored with steel gauntlets, not just smart cloth.
"Sorry,"
I said. Sargon sat down again with the Belcher in his arms, and he laughed while I ignored him. I'd been called Splat countless times by everyone since leaving Earth. It was something a new recruit had to get used to. The only way to prove them wrong was not to panic on the way down and splatter yourself all over the ground of your first alien world. Apparently, this happened quite often. I went back to checking my routines. I tapped at the back of my left wrist with mesh-covered fingers. Lights glimmered green one after another in sequence. Oxygen, power, rifle. They were all good. Out of nowhere, Veteran Harris appeared again and loomed over me. Like all his kind, he was big, loud, and hell-bent on stomping the newest men flat on our first drop.
"Show me your lights, McGill."
I dutifully rotated my wrist in his direction. He strained to peer down through his faceplate. In full jump gear, it was a difficult trick to read another man's vitals, but he managed it. My suit wasn't armored, but it wasn't white and papery like the vac equipment of last century's astronauts either. Instead, it was like wearing thick, stiff cloth covered with aluminum foil. It made me think of a parka made of tough canvas. The heavy troops around me wore metal shells with spherical rotating joints at the shoulders and elbows. I envied their expensive gear.
"Huh."
Veteran Harris grunted after reading my numbers.
"You're good to go, Splat."
"Thank you for looking after me, Veteran." Harris shook his head and chuckled. He clanked away. Both of us knew he hadn't forgotten about taking a half dozen rounds in the chest from my snap rifle, and I had a weapon in my hands right now that probably served as an excellent reminder. The moment he was out of sight around the end of the row of seats, the ship began to shake violently. I saw the weapon here next to me look around worriedly. "It's only interceptor fire," I said to him, grinning. "Don't rust your armor. That's Legion property." For some reason, this made him mad. I'd encountered this sort of thing on many occasions. Splats were constantly teased and expected to take it. I did so, but I always took the time to dish a little back whenever I saw the opportunity. This seemed to anger most of my seniors.
"You don't know anything," Sargon told me with conviction. "This is exactly the time to be nervous."
"Why is that?" I asked him.
"Listen up, McGill. What kind of name is that anyway? What are you, from Scotland?"
"Georgia."
"Whatever. Listen up. You want to live through your first jump?"
"I was planning on it."
"Then get out of this lifter fast. It won't go all the way down. It will toss us out over the target, but that's a good thing. The best and earliest way for any Legionnaire to achieve permadeath is right here, right now. This lifter has all your data uploaded. If you want to come back in one piece from this campaign or get revived, the lifter can't blow up while you're in it."
I frowned. It seemed like someone was giving me actual information for once, but considering the source, I wasn't sure that I should trust it. I wasn't accustomed to such treatment. Maybe it was the reality of what we were about to face in the next few minutes that had prompted the weaponeer to give me survival advice.